Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm on Magic 590 and 100.5.
Well, welcome and good morning.
That's the new music?
Huh? Yeah, Ben started that last week. Oh, right?
I think it's from the future.
Very dramatic.
Yeah.
Sounds like the introduction to the last episode of Game of Thrones.
Well, good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
I'm Harry Miller, and this is the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. We are here each Saturday morning to chat with you. take your calls, answer your questions, get some information out to you about estate planning, asset protection planning, estate administration, wills, trusts, advanced directives, all those good things that you have questions about. We would love to talk to you and chat with you for the next hour here at Magic 590. And you can reach Dave and I this morning in the studio at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, we got a toll-free number, and it's real easy. It's 1-800-WROW-590. So good morning.
Good morning.
Finally stopped raining for a day, huh?
Hey, don't say anything. Just
not
everyone out there. Don't say anything about how finally anything.
No, just enjoy the day.
Yeah, don't jinx it. Just go get outside and enjoy the day. It's been a while, Harry. I haven't been on radio for a couple weekends. I had things happen in my life.
Yes, and congratulations.
Thank you.
I think we announced the birth of your son yesterday. Last week on the radio, Jane Marie was on with me, and he was just like a. Real, like a day or two old. What was he born on?
He was born on May 2nd.
Okay.
So he's 16 days old.
16 days old.
Today.
And everybody's doing well? Baby? Yeah. Everybody's, cool?
Yeah, we're, for the most part, sleeping all right. Waking up a couple times.
You don't look exhausted today. It looked like you at least got a couple hours of,
Yeah.
I remember those days when you're up, especially with when you bring the new, newborn home.
Well.
It's like a...
So I went to bed, and I woke up, and it was light outside. I said, oh, my God, he slept through the whole night. And my wife said, no, he didn't. I just didn't wake you up. So
was that nice of her?
Yeah, that was very nice of her. Absolutely. Yeah. She said, Dave's got radio, and it's with Harry. He's got to be good. He's got to be on top of things. It's Harry Miller.
Oh my heavens. Yeah, definitely.
Well, listen, Harry, I got to get something off my chest here. There's an article in the New York Times. It's in the money section or the business section, and it's in the your money
today or last week or
a couple days ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the title is Many Americans Will Need Long-Term Care. Most Won't Be Able to Afford It. So far, I agree.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Statement, I think.
Yeah. Yes. I think the numbers are 70% plus.
Yeah.
Are going to need long-term care.
65 to 70% of people over 65 are going to need some kind of care. It might be home care, it might be assisted living, it might be a nursing home. But somewhere along the line as we age, we're going to need some kind of care to get us through.
Okay. So this article profiles a divorced. She's actually an administrative judge. Her name is Gretchen Harris. She lives in Norman, Oklahoma. So she works when she can. She's getting older, has some long-term care needs, is taking lots of medications, and she's got what I would think is a very nice pension and Social Security.
She's still working? I mean, she's not
flying. A little bit. And
judges usually get paid good, and they have nice pensions.
Her
right?
retirement income, the pension and Social Security, it's about $5,000 a month.
Okay.
And has a mortgage on her house.
She must have been a lower court judge. Sorry.
No, Harry, you're nice. No family to speak of locally. And so she's talking about how she's worried about her needs in the future and that in Norman, a nice one bedroom in an independent senior living or something like that would be around $3,400, maybe assisted living, something like that. So
yeah.
She's concerned because... Eventually, she's going to run, assuming she wants to have meals and do this and do that, and she's going to run low on cash. And here's where it really aggravated me. So she says that she's in the middle class bind, and the article talks like this is a thing, right? too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to pay for long-term care. This is a middle group. And it's, yeah, sure, you may have too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but this entire article, which is probably about, I don't know, 3,000 words, does not mention anywhere the idea of planning for Medicaid or long-term care planning in that way. It's just talking about long-term care insurance, which is obviously something you can buy to help pay for your care. And it's talking about, oh my gosh, you have no choice but to spend down your assets until you then happen to qualify for Medicaid. Like you don't have a choice in it. Like you don't have any options. And I'm going to write the New York Times a letter. I'm not going to write them a letter. I'm kidding.
You know, you ought to, actually, because, you know, I don't know if it's the fault of reporters or there's just a general lack of understanding about the system that provides care through the Medicaid program. Most people, I mean, it's astonishing to me. We did a series of seminars this week, Dave and I, and Debbie's been away, but Jay Marie, on differentiating between wills and trusts. And wasn't really part of this. I got into some of the home care initiatives that are available in New York State for a lot of people who would never think they would qualify for Medicaid, right? And a lot of, you know, half the people in the audience were frankly astonished that you could get home care through the Medicaid program in New York and not have to transfer your assets 5 years before you can apply for it and receive it.
And Harry, I mean, I'm reading this article as you're speaking, and it says almost matter-of-factly, right? Well, when it comes to nursing homes, at least Medicaid is a major paying option. Does not mention that Medicaid is a major paying option for care at home.
Right.
If you
right.
just know about it.
Now, it could be in Norman, Oklahoma, the home care system isn't as great as New York. I mean, one of the things you need to understand about Medicaid is it is a federal program administered through state and county social services departments. And in order to receive federal dollars, each state has to meet certain minimum standards. All right. But once they meet those minimum standards that the federal government sets, they're free to make their own rules. Now, New York's been one of those states that has always believed that home care is still cheaper to keep people at home than to put them into an institutional environment. I mean, apart from the quality of care and the quality of life issues, it's just cheaper, okay? New York has a number of different types of Medicaid programs. The federal regulations only mandate that each state has one home care program. And so some of them only have one, and not such a great program either.
Well, so here's understood, and every state's different. It's a New York Times article that's talking about this national phenomenon.
And they pick somebody in Oklahoma. You think they could find somebody in New York?
Well, they're calling it the middle class bind, right? The forgotten middle. And they're saying in a bunch of different places here. And I think maybe the lens they're taking is that if you need assisted living, which is not a Medicaid-covered facility.
No, that's
facility,
private pay for the most part.
There, if you need assisted living care and it has to be in an assisted living facility, right, income's going to be an issue.
Right.
Potentially. That's true.
It is. I mean, the average in the Capital District, you know, assisted living facilities generally start in the range of about $5,000 a month and go up to about $8,000 or $9,000 a month, depending upon the level of care the person needs. The more care you need, the more expensive it is. The highest level of care generally are people who need to be in a memory care unit because the staffing ratios are higher. They need far more assistance and prompting and care with things with mid to late stage dementia, Alzheimer's. So those places in the Capital District are going to run, you know, probably $7,500 to $9,000 a month. That lady in Oklahoma doesn't have, I mean, if she's $5,000 a month for a basic assisted living facility, she don't have enough money left to pay her health insurance premiums.
So, you know, back to the headline, many Americans will need long-term care. Yes, we agree. Most won't be able to afford it. Also agree, but most don't know that there are other options available other than just their income paying for their needs.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. So, you know, it's true. More people are living longer and have long-term care needs, and more people are getting to this point in life and maybe have debt or they have... They're, you know, helping their kids out a little more so they have less of their own money to pay for retirement. So when something like this long-term care need pops up, this new expense that they never had, that they didn't budget for necessarily. Yeah, there's going to be a crunch, no doubt about it, right? And there's no substitute for just having more money or planning in advance, okay? However, Harry, you know, there is a lot. We say that whether it's 5 years ahead of time or 5 days ahead of time, you always have something you can do that's going to save you and your family some money. And these general articles that people read like this doesn't have the opportunity to get into the nitty-gritty. Doesn't say, but contact your local attorney to see what options are available to you. Those words don't exist in this article.
I think that's what you should put in your letter to the New York Times. The fact that they kind of missed the whole point of their article was lost. And you know what the reaction people have who read it is, oh, well, I don't have this much income. There's no way at 72 I'm going to start getting more income. So the heck with it. There's nothing I can do. So I'm not even going to bother calling anybody to discuss whether there are options. So I would say that they have failed there.
Well, you know,
as someone once called it the failing New York Times. I'm sorry, that was not me. But they missed the point that there are options. There are people out there like our law firm who can point you in the right direction. I mean, no, not everybody's going to get the perfect amount of care. We don't live in an ideal world, but there are a lot of care options out there, and the vast majority of New Yorkers and people in the whole country just aren't aware that they exist.
Well, so, you know, this is the first time, I'll admit, first time I'm actually clicking on read the comments to an article, and so I'm looking at the comments right now, and New York Times can actually highlight certain comments, and one of the ones they highlighted was from an individual in Massachusetts, and they say, currently dealing with this issue with my parents, mom 80, dad 90, et cetera, et cetera. Nursing homes in Boston are $13,000 a month.
I bet they're more than that. They're $15,000
here. Here's the line that we should focus on. With the help of elder law attorneys, we were able to get dad onto Medicaid, which has some income and asset protections when there is a spouse at home, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Massachusetts is different than New York. Some of the rules are a little different. The thresholds that above which you do not qualify are different.
Right.
So obviously,
but conceptually, the same plan. The concept of sheltering assets inside a family owned and operated trust for more than 5 years before you have to go into a nursing home and apply for Medicaid. That concept applies in every single state. All right, because that's a federally mandated statute. I still have people come in I had this a few weeks ago, who are under the impression that there's a 7-year look back instead of a 5-year look back.
Where does that come from?
One lady about a month ago said she read somewhere that it was going to go up to 10 years. I said, no, I mean, it could, but
it's going to go up to 10 years.
There is no current proposal. There's no current bill in Congress that would do that, and it would require federal legislation. The state alone could not do it unilaterally.
One of the seminar attendees said, I heard it's going to 7. I said, I don't know where you're hearing this stuff. And I said, believe me, if it's going to 7, we're gonna take over every radio station. We're going to scream it from the mountaintops to make sure everyone knows about
it. You will have heard it here first.
Absolutely. the first comment, the first highlighted comment, and it was looks like it's recommended by enough readers, meaning that essentially they liked this. Says that you failed to mention Medicare for All and how that would solve everything. And I don't think that's going to solve.
Well, I think that's a tongue-in-cheek.
Long-term.
I think that's a tongue-in-cheek.
Based on what I'm reading here, but that's another falsehood, right? People think Medicare, and they think Medicaid, all right, if you got Medicare, your long-term care needs are taken care of, but that's just not true. Some of your needs may be taken care of by the Medicare program, particularly if you were in a hospital for 3 days.
Hospital doctors and things, but Medicare does not provide for chronic care.
Yeah, I mean, they'll help with the rehab. Maybe they'll get mom and dad back on their feet and back home.
Yeah, for 3 months at the most. Yeah. 100 days.
Yeah, 100 days.
It's 3 months.
Yeah.
And even if you'll get potentially 100 days of rehabilitation therapy following a hospital discharge. And a stay in a hospital of at least three days. Beyond that, there's no Medicare coverage for long-term care, only acute care.
We'd love for you to be our first caller at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. Harry, I mentioned before we started, I had a consultation yesterday for a potential Medicaid client, and I'd love to talk about it if I may.
Go right ahead.
So, son came in. Mom has a second spouse. Okay. So he's got a stepdad.
All right.
Mom lived in another state, now lives in New York, and is at an assisted living facility with memory care. She has dementia, but enough capacity to sign new documents if need be. She's going to run out of money. Okay. It's going to happen at some point. Right. And the question is from the client's son, how long can the money last? What are our payment options? And so on and so forth. And we kind of all agreed that they would need to really have miracles to get to the 2-year anniversary of mom being in this particular memory care facility, because there'll be some discounts on the cost of care after that 2-year anniversary. That's what they're telling me.
Okay, so, yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're looking at really scraping and the kids giving money to mom to keep her there, mm-hmm. to get to that point after which they think they might be able to afford it based on her income.
All right.
Okay.
Once they get through the first 2 years.
Yeah. Right. Spouses, and we, Chester, hold on just a second, all right? We do have... a spouse, but the spouse and wife don't really get along. He has no intention of helping her out. He's got his own family from a prior relationship and so on. Hold that thought. We'll get to Chester and we'll come back to it. Chester from Utica, how are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Wow,
question,
we're in Utica.
In a irrevocable trust,
yes, sir.
In a IRA, a regular IRA, be put into an irrevocable trust?
So, no. The answer is no. No, your individual retirement account cannot go into your irrevocable Medicaid trust. However, if you want your IRA to go to people and you really don't want those people to spend all that IRA money right away, or you want rules on that IRA money, you could leave it to a trust and have a trusted IRA after the fact, right, to help manage money for people. But you cannot put it in a Medicaid trust. And you know what? You don't have to.
The good news is, if you have to go to a nursing home and apply for Medicaid, the money in your IRA, even though it's not in your trust, doesn't have to be completely spent down and liquidated to pay for the nursing home. All right? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
No. So listen, if you had to go to a nursing home and apply for Medicaid, and let's say you got $200,000 in an IRA.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to spend the $200,000 on your nursing home care, because if you're taking distributions, which you have to start doing at 70 and a half,
right?
You know, you got to take a certain amount out of there every year. The county social services department does not count that $200,000 as an asset. All right, they treat the distribution as income for you. Now you might have to give them some or all of the distribution. But like it's 70 and a half.
And that's the balance in the IRA account.
And the balance in the IRA stays there. So if you're 70 and a half and it's 200 grand, the distribution is going to be, I don't know, maybe $6,000 or $7,000 the first year.
Yes, sir,
you might have to give them the $6,000 or $7,000, but the rest of the 200 sits there. And even if you've been on Medicaid for 3 years, when you die, it goes to your wife or your kids or whoever the beneficiary is.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
The reason it can't go in a trust is... it's not like an account. You'd have to liquidate the IRA in order to put it in the trust. And what that means is you'd have to pay income tax, ordinary income tax on the whole thing, which would be absolutely foolish.
Well, I'm going to push back on Harry for a second there, and thanks for the call, Chester. There are times where we will, and you know, in particular when Mike and I, one of our Medicaid paralegals sits with the client. Lower pensions, right? In, you know, it's a, we have a community Medicaid client. We have a couple small IRAs. Maybe we cash them out.
Oh, if they're little, yeah.
Big ones, absolutely. Big ones,
it
no
would depend.
Way.
Listen, it would depend on the situation.
Yeah.
There are no hard and fast rules. And if we got an IRA, got money in an IRA for somebody who's 93 years old, the RMD's pretty darn high. So maybe we want to liquidate and save half of it. There are all sorts of considerations that go into these decisions.
The phone board's lighting up here. I don't know if we were giving away something today. I forgot. Are we giving away something?
Not that I know of.
Well, we do have Karen in Saratoga. Good morning, Karen.
Hello?
Karen, you there? We don't have Karen. Well, Karen, call back.
Call back if
oh, we got... the board is off. I spoke too soon.
All right. Well, call back.
Yeah, everyone call back. All right, we will give away. The next caller,
5900
next caller gets a homemade dinner from Harry Miller. Just kidding.
Well, the next time I make bolognese sauce, I'll bring some in for you. All right?
Please.
For a guy who's not Italian, I make a pretty decent bolognese sauce if I say so myself. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the secret?
Well, if I told you that, everybody could make it.
Well, you know, you could say the ingredients, but it's all how you mix it.
I use three kinds of meat. I use a little ground beef, ground pork, ground veal.
Uh-huh.
Okay. San Marzano tomatoes. Don't ever use any kind of tomatoes in a sauce other than San Marzano.
If you're driving out there, pull over and write down this recipe. Go ahead. And
Marcello Hazen, who is one of the greatest Italian chefs of all time, she's died with a lot of butter.
Okay.
She's got a four-ingredient sauce. That's not bolognese. I make it bolognese later. It's just it's got salt, onion, tomatoes, and butter. Lots of butter, which makes it velvety and wonderful.
Well, I can tell you, Karen in Saratoga is pretty excited about that. We have her coming up on the line in a second. The board is lit up again, so Josh is taking care of some of these calls.
Josh is filling in for Ben this morning. Ben got a weekend off. How about that?
I can't believe it.
He hardly ever takes a weekend off.
So the secret to good tasting food is lots of butter. Who knew? Karen in Saratoga. How are you, Karen?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. Sorry about all that. What's going on?
Actually, I saw a show and I was a little concerned about it because this woman worked her whole life and paid into the system her whole life, and then she had a hip replacement, and she said, they interviewed the doctors and everything, there's a thing now that if you're in the hospital and you don't have the right status, it could be you're in observation instead of admitted.
Right, yeah. Right.
And she was stuck with a huge bill,
yep.
and that this status can be changed not just day to day, but hour to hour.
Well,
and
so,
they interviewed one of the doctors who said he did not realize that it was affecting his patients like that. And I just am trying to understand this whole thing.
Okay. Well, a wonderful point you're bringing up. And Harry, I'm turning it over to you because you lived this. You went through this and you advocated for it. So what's going on
here? When somebody goes to a hospital... us lay people who aren't medical people assume that they have been admitted to the hospital by their doctor. Well, there's two statuses, as a caller was saying. There's admission, and then there's this thing called observation. Now, a lot of older people come to a hospital by way of the emergency room. All right,
they may have had palpitations. They don't feel
heart
well.
Heart palpitations. Yeah. They had a mild stroke. They had a fall, and they're brought into the emergency room. Now, at that point, they are simply being observed in the emergency room by the ER staff, all right? And they're treating them emergency treatment, whatever it is. Now, they may be treated and go home, or they may be treated and then sent upstairs to a room at some point. Now, if they're sent upstairs to a room, that doesn't mean they were admitted.
They're going
to
be. They're going to continue to observe them.
Right. Now, as David said, I went through this several years ago with my mother-in-law.
Yep.
She fell, all right? She fell and broke her hip, all right? She was like 92 years old. They took her to the hospital. She was in the emergency room for, I don't know, 6 or 8 hours, and they took her upstairs to a room. The following day, they took her to surgery, all right? And she had a general anesthesia. And she had surgery on her hip where they put in, you know, screws and plates or whatever they do, fixed it all up real nice. They did a great job. Excellent doctor. She was then there for another 2 or 3 days. So she'd been in the hospital now for probably 4 nights, 5 days. Now she's going to be discharged to the rehabilitation facility around the corner for some rehab for a couple of weeks. And my wife called me one day and said, oh, my God. My mother has not, she's on observation status. She's not been admitted. I said, wait, stop. Do not let her, Do not let her leave the building.
Yep.
We went over. We met. What happened was the orthopedic practice screwed up. They never formally admitted her. Then these doctors don't know what's going on. They're medical people. They're not bureaucratic, administrative, paperwork people. So, you know, we got the problem fixed. Had she left and gone to the other thing, guess what? None of her rehab would have been covered. None of it.
So, Harry, you got the problem fixed. You didn't just say,
only because
hey, excuse
we knew,
me,
we
can
knew
you please?
How do I, we knew it was a problem. A lot of people don't know it's a problem until the person's in the nursing home for rehab, and then all of a sudden they come say, oh, I'm sorry, your mother was never admitted to the hospital, so you owe us $500 a day for the rehab.
Right, and so, Karen, where the difference in status matters is that we mentioned a couple minutes ago Medicare. Medicare can cover rehabilitation as long as there was a qualified hospital stay prior to the rehab. A qualified hospital stay is 3 days admitted.
Two midnights. You got to be there two midnights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The case, that first day, right, maybe even the transportation to the facility, right, it's all on you. Even though some of it you would say is healthcare-ish, right, helping me get better, right? I'm going to rehab to help get better. But you're at a skilled nursing facility that's 24/7, right? That's beyond just the rehab. That's on you.
Right. You see, the reason is your rehab from a hospital administration, the rehab is covered under Medicare Part A. And if you're not admitted, your hospital is covered under Medicare Part B. And Medicare Part B doesn't pay for rehabilitation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the medical, technical, contractual difference between the Medicare program. And so you got to really be on your toes. If you have somebody in a hospital, you know, make sure you go to the nurse's station. Make sure you get to look at your mother or father or your husband or wife's medical records. Find out from the nursing staff there, is my mother admitted or is she only on observation status? And if she's on observation status and you think she's going to have to go for rehab, you're going to have to get that doctor to admit her if you can. I mean, you got to talk to these people. These days in medical situations, you need to have an advocate there for you, a child, a spouse, a relative, a friend, somebody who can advocate for you while you're in the hospital. Because, you're in the hospital. You're at a low energy point. Your mind may not be functioning as quickly as it ought to be. And the other thing is, none of you out there know about these things to begin with. So, you know, that's enough of that. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
Dave and I are two of the partners with the Herzog Law Firm. We are conveniently located over at Corporate Woods at 7 South Woods Boulevard. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs and down in Kingston, New York. We kind of cover a big chunk of the Mid-Hudson Valley here from Glens Falls all the way down to the Westchester County border. And we practice estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, estate administration. We do a lot of things with, beneficial types of things. We one of the critical parts of practice is to not just make sure that your estate plan is in order, but all of your various beneficiary designations are set. So we would love to talk to you. We're here for another half hour here at Magic 590. And if you want to reach us, our number here in the studio is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. The toll-free number, if you're outside the local calling area. Well, I don't know, a caller from Utica this morning.
Wow.
I don't think that's good reception. Or maybe he's listening on a computer. You can listen on a computer, too. 1-800-WROW-590. Okay, Dave, take
it
away.
Yeah, so before we get to Cheryl's call, who's next here, I want to get back to Karen's call for a second. So, Karen, you happen to find out about this big difference in distinction between observation and admitted and what it can mean and all that stuff. We had people at our seminars, and one of them said to me, how come more people don't know what you're talking about when I was doing my seminar? And it's because a lot of people just don't know. This isn't, you know, it's not a New York Times article about why admitted status matters, right? That those don't exist. And so what we say to our clients is, when you're our client, right, come in every several years, whatever it is, just to check in. But when there are big events happening, our phones are always open for your phone call. So if you're a client, right, and or mom's a client, and mom just went to the hospital, hey, give us a call. Let us know, because we may say, hey, listen, good luck with everything, but make sure she's admitted if it's going to be more than blank amount of days. Right. All right, go talk to the hospital administrator. Do this or do that. Because there's no way for us to really spread the word on all of these things. We're only going to know when a client went into the hospital, usually after the fact, and sometimes several days after the fact. But the earlier you get us involved, the better.
Yeah, you can just call up. I mean, if you or your parents are clients, and you can just go, hey, my mom's in the hospital. You know, she fell or she had a mild stroke, and she might have to go. Are we okay? Is there anything we ought to be doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can pull your file, call you back. You know, we can go through the file and, you know, give you a little heads up, because, I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and you're not getting a bill in the mail. We're just talking. I mean, it's
if
we got to help
you. If you're a client and we're talking to you on the phone for 15 or 20, believe me, we're not going to send you a bill. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the hesitancy of people to call lawyers is afraid that every minute they spend on the phone, they're cha-ching, cha-ching. Our firm doesn't operate that way,
yeah.
Okay? We don't, you know, we set up an asset protection trust. You know, we don't charge an annual fee to you to maintain your trust.
That's actually a pretty good idea, an annual fee, huh?
We don't. Well, there are some firms that have done that. So we're not one of them.
And, we're not.
You know, and if you're a client of the firm, you know, you can call us up, everyone. You know, you can't call us up four times a day, but, you know, when you have a question, we'll call you up, we'll answer the question, and we won't send you a bill.
If you need, we'll give you Harry's home phone number or whatever you want.
My cell phone number.
And your internet password.
I did give that to a client yesterday, but that's a rare thing, but
okay.
I did. This was a particularly special client.
Well, speaking of phone calls, we do have one. Her name is Cheryl. She lives in Albany. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, good morning.
What's going on?
I have a cold. So.
Oh, no.
Sound a little hoarse.
You mean all this rain and wind and allergy season?
Oh, you and me, Cheryl. I got bad allergies. I haven't been able to breathe in the last 2 weeks.
So my question is, I'm 60 years old, and I'm divorced, and I started paperwork on an irrevocable trust to put my home in a trust for my two children.
Mm-hmm.
I did not finish. Because my biggest question is, if I'm lucky enough to meet a good man and remarry, isn't it going to make things complicated now that I have, you know, a home that maybe, you know, I'm going to want to, you know, sell and merge into a home with a new gentleman.
So let me
potential gentleman.
Well, so listen, your trust is not going to complicate that aspect of your life. Okay. We have lots and lots and lots of clients, far more than I ever imagined, that have perhaps children from previous relationships or in their second, sometimes even third marriages, or they're not even married, but they have a significant other. Okay.
Right.
And when that happens, you know, the complicating parts are, well, you know, I really want these assets I had before this individual came into my life. I want them to end up, those assets to end up with my kids one day. But relationships happen, and you know, we have these kinds of relationships that our clients have, and they really want that significant other to continue to live in the house, for example, right? But then one day, at the end of the day, when no one's around, we want that money to go to my kids only, right? Not to his family, because that was my asset before that relationship. So it's really easy. I mean, don't worry about our part of it. You know, protect your assets. Get that process going. Get that clock ticking.
Okay.
It's really easy in your trust, in the rest of your estate plan, to simply have language that helps take care of significant others while keeping things going to your kids at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, for just by way of example, if your house was in your trust and your trust continued for the rest of your life and then whatever is left went to the kids. Now, let's say you met somebody down the road and you wanted to sell your house and the two of you wanted to buy a house together. Well, you can still sell your house even though it's in the trust. So you could sell the house and the money would go into a bank account or stock account in your name. Now, you and your new person could buy this house together, and you could take the money from the sale of your house and pay half the cost of the new house, and he could take half of his money, and you could own half the house, he could own the other half of the house, or one of you could buy it, and we could amend your trust to provide that if you died first, he could continue to live in the house as long as he paid the taxes and the insurance and stuff, and then down the road when it was sold, the money would go back to your children. So there's I guess the point of my story is that we can build a whole lot of flexibility into your trust that will accommodate your lifestyle changes over the years.
Yeah, Cheryl, whatever you want sounds good to us, and we can help you accomplish it. It's just words on a piece of paper.
Okay.
Those words can accomplish anything.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
So, Harry, we got about 20 minutes left here.
Yeah.
I know that as soon as I start talking about my fact pattern again, the phones are going to light
up. That's all right. Well, then we'll interrupt and we'll take the calls. Right?
So, client's son is in. Mom's not doing well. She's in a memory care facility in the Capital Region. Husband is out of state.
And not particularly cooperative?
Right. I mean, that's understating what he has been or not been.
Uh-huh.
They do have a house that's joint, and there are a couple accounts in her name. And most of the discussion was, is there going to be a divorce between these two individuals or not? Does that make sense for that to happen? Is there, you know, because there is equity in this property that mom could really use if we need to private pay for her memory care, her assisted living. But the reason why I want to bring up the fact pattern and bounce it off of you is because at some point, right, we know that people are going to get older, right? You don't get younger. We know that when you have dementia, and I think
unless
she has
you're Benjamin Button.
Well, Benjamin Button, Brad Pitt aside, right? We know you're going to get older. We know that your care, all things being equal, is going to increase. And if you have dementia, it's going to get worse.
Right.
Okay, we didn't create that fact pattern. That's just how it is. So when this family is saying, all right, well, we want to keep her in this one facility, that's fantastic. I love it. However, I know that at some point they're going to run out of money. It may be they're going to run out of money in 4 months. It may be that if they're able to unlock money from this house, they're going to run out of money maybe in a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to impress on them that you got to look in the future. And all things being equal, you may want to be a month or two too early in pulling the trigger on going to maybe custodial care in a nursing home rather than being late. And one of the reasons is, just like there are a lot of different universities out there or high schools out there and school districts, some are good, some are not so good. Same is true for nursing homes. You've been to them all. I've been to them all for document signings and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. We do that routinely.
Sometimes there's not a big difference between an assisted living and a nursing home if it's a really good nursing home. Obviously there's a difference, but you want your loved one to get to the best one possible. And because money's going to be a thing at some point, you're going to run out of money at some point. So that there's a reason why everyone's not going to be at the best assisted living for the rest of their lives, right? Because money.
Unless your children can subsidize your care there. The problem is when you run out of money, you can't be at assisted living anymore because they're all private pay.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There's a handful that have some Medicaid beds, but for the most part, that's not an option for most people. Then you either have to bring mom home someplace, which usually isn't realistic, or she has to transition to long-term care.
I'm really happy you mentioned that, because then I said, have you ever thought about her being in a senior, independent senior apartment and having community Medicaid with essentially round-the-clock care that right. you private pay for whatever Medicaid doesn't cover. But because of her diagnosis, you know, and what I know Kim could do for our clients, they'd be looking at double-digit hours a day for their loved one. And right. it's a way to actually preserve the income.
It might be... It would be far less expensive than assisted living. It obviously is going to depend on her level of functioning, all right?
Right, and so for
her... she's a candidate for independent living.
Yeah, so for her, it's not going to work out, right?
Right.
But, you know, not to toot our own horns, but we met for about an hour and a half, okay? Uh-huh. We went through every permutation, got them a lot of things to think about, right? Because we're... in my mind, really creative. I mean, it's one thing to know what the law says. It's another thing to be able to interpret facts in the moment and be able to really come up with creative solutions. And so, you know, other people, I don't know if they would be told, hey, look, at some point, you know, the bad news here. Right. I know you're hoping for the best, but guess what? And you're going to need to plan for it. And that's our job. And I think we're pretty good at it. And the more fact patterns that people give right. to us... You know, we do free consults, an hour free consult. Yesterday was an hour and a half free consult, okay? You call our office, mm-hmm. you come in, you bounce it off of us. Worst case, we give you good advice. It's the worst.
You come in, you pick our brains for an hour, and you'll be all that much smarter,
and,
right?
And we'll be smarter for it, too.
I think
you
hear what you're saying, David, if I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, knowing the law, I mean, it's sort of a given that we know the law. I mean, if you're going to a lawyer and they don't know the yeah. law, you need another lawyer. I mean, we do know the law, but we also understand how the systems operate. So, for instance, if you come to us and you're looking for home care for a parent, for instance... and you live up in Burn Knox, Westerlo, or you're out in Schoharie County somewhere, all right? I mean, we know the law about getting home care, and we might be able to get you approved for 16 hours a day of home care.
Financially.
Yeah. Legally, we can get you qualified. And then you're going to find out, whoa, there are hardly any home care workers available in your particular zip code. Just because it's rural... it's hard to get to in the winter, and we know that. That, yeah. that has nothing to do with the law. That has to do with our depth of knowledge, understanding the realities
yeah.
of implementing the law. And so we're going to say, look, before you spin your wheels and spend a lot of money going through this process, let's check out the home care availability, first of all. And guess what? You don't have to go anywhere else because Kim Hance, who is a certified care manager, is on our staff. And she can go out and talk to your mom or dad, do a house visit for a rather modest fee, and she can say, okay, fine, this is fine and this is fine, and you need 12 hours a day of care. But the most I think you're going to get, at least for the next year, is two or three, because there's a crunch mm-hmm. in home health areas. Then you can say, okay, it's not worth spinning our wheels, or maybe it is.
Right, and she, you know, there you can have family members and friends be caregivers. So that really, you know, if we have ready, willing, and able caregivers, it really changes the calculus a little bit.
That's a whole different thing. If you know somebody you can hire, a friend, a neighbor, somebody at church, or a relative, we can set that up too.
My favorite example is right. You have this caregiver. It's going to be your one of your kids. Fantastic, right? We get you financially qualified. Fantastic. Kim goes to the house. It was built in 1870. The doorways are 2 feet wide.
They want to accommodate a wheelchair
or a walker.
It ain't
going to work, right? And so there's that dose of reality. Our profession is not in a vacuum. Every fact pattern is different. Everything depends on everything else. And mm-hmm. it's a really good idea to, when you're listening on the radio, when you come to one of our seminars, when you're reading an article in the New York Times, that you get the law to apply to your specific facts, and you can call our office at 518-465-7581, or you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com. That's if you want to attend the seminar. That's if you want a free consult. That's if you think you misheard us on something and you'd like some clarification, you want a 10-minute phone call, whatever.
And don't wait until you're at such a state in aging that you need these services in the next 2 weeks. I mean, planning ahead for this stuff is important.
We do have a caller, John in Bern. How are you, John?
Good morning. I I'm a client of Harry Miller's, and I've been very happy with the law firm.
Hi, John. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you are. That could have been a really bad call if you weren't. Jeez.
I just have a quick question. If I would put my house in a Medicaid trust, I have other assets, stock, bonds, cash. I would still have to spend those first before I would qualify for Medicaid. Is that correct?
Kind of, right? So what we're going to recommend to you, and if it's been a while since you've seen Harry, you should definitely come in just to touch base and take a look at the numbers. But we're going to encourage people to put their home, which is usually the largest asset, and then a relatively large amount of their other resources, what Medicaid considers to be a resource. We're not going to bleed you dry. We want you to still have money that's your day-to-day money, and you could always access money from the trust in a pinch anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about spending or private paying that other money, right, we're going to hope that that's not a lot of money to begin with.
It depends. And it depends whether you have a spouse or not.
Right.
How much money you can have.
And when you know, if you said, I do a trust, I put stuff in, and I don't put everything in, and then all of a sudden there's this event where I need a nursing home, and you say, you know, at least these things are protected. It's been 5 years. We then, you know, we have three Medicaid paralegals. They all used to work for the Department of Social Service and, you know, one of our attorneys. And we're going to basically say, all right, let's figure out how to properly spend your excess money. Have you prepaid funeral? Maybe we'll do that, right? Have you paid for this? Have you paid for that? Maybe fix up the house a little bit here or there. There are certain valid...
Spend some money improving... Yeah. The house is in the trust and the equity value of the house is already protected. If you have excess resources... We could spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 of home improvements, which are going to benefit the trust and your family down the road.
Yeah.
Rather than spending the money on long-term care, we could put it into an asset that's already protected and eventually is going to pass on to your family members. You know, when the trust dissolves. So,
So John, I mean, your specific question was, would you have to? And I guess the short answer is yes, but there are lots of creative ways to do it, and we would prefer to properly fund the trust beyond just the house. That doesn't mean everything, but, you know, based on your life and when you anticipate spending money in the future, right? If you have big trips planned, I don't want you to put in the big trip money, right, for example. But you come in and we come up with a plan. And sometimes the plan doesn't work because things happen faster than we wanted to in your life, and we adjust the plan.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for listening.
And again, I've been very happy with the law firm.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it.
You know, I mean, we're very client. Our law firm, we are very client-oriented. You know, we really are, all of us, and it's not just, I mean, there are really four of us here. There's me, David, Debbie, and Jay Murray are the core group of attorneys. We have other attorneys in the office, but we're the core group that runs the elder law practice. And you know, we really pay attention to our clients. I think what we try to do is listen.
Yeah.
Listening is really, you know, lawyers are notorious for shooting their mouths out. Lawyers just talk. And David and I could sit here for three more hours probably and talk about this stuff.
Could.
You know, yeah. But we don't want to put you to sleep. But the really critical part, I think, of being a good elder law attorney is listening to the client before you start shooting your mouth off.
it's that, obviously having the knowledge that you talked about, but it's heavy stuff and it's depressing stuff. And if you're able to speak to people and reassure them without sugarcoating stuff, right? There's the reality sometimes stinks and we don't shy away from that, but you got to know what you got to know and we'll help you through the process. You know, it's not fun, but we'll do it.
Well, we're all aging, you know. And you're right. This is true. We're talking about getting old, getting sick, going to nursing homes, dying. I mean, it's dreary, dreary stuff. But once you meet it head on, it's like anything you're fearful of. People are fearful of aging and dying. It's human nature. Once you confront your fear, however, and you actually develop a plan in conjunction with your attorney, then you don't have to be afraid of it anymore. It's taken care of. And then from time to time, every couple of years, you go back and you revisit it, and maybe you have to fine-tune it from here, you know, from time to time. But
Harry, I have a 5-year-old and a 16-day-old, right?
Right.
And when I did the seminars this past week, I was talking about how if something happens to my wife and I, how things have to go to my 16-day-year-old and 5-year-old so that way their lives don't get ruined besides the fact their parents died.
Right.
Because I don't want them to get money at 18. That's not fun stuff to it's just how it is, okay? Protect your... The people out there, they have life insurance. They don't have life insurance because they're going to live forever. I guarantee that's not why they got life insurance, right?
Right. And is one of the beneficiaries of that life insurance policy a 16-year-old kid, for instance?
No. Yeah.
A grandchild or a child?
Well, it shouldn't be, but yeah.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
I got people that come in here and they have minor children or 20-year-olds who are beneficiaries of a large IRA.
Were you ever 20, Harry? Were you ever 20 years old?
I but I actually remember.
I remember a couple weeks ago when we were on the radio, you were saying that you inherited a little bit of money and you immediately bought a car.
I did.
Yeah.
I was actually, I forget, my grandmother
did. Yeah, you were a knucklehead. You didn't even know it. Buying a car.
Well, you know.
You could have invested
just
that.
Left us, but yeah, this was 45 years ago, and my grandmother left each of me and my sisters a bequest of $5,000. Well, in the mid-1970s.
How much money was it?
$5,000.
I'm going to compound interest that $5,000 for 45.
Triumph Spitfire. I bought a 1977 or 78 Triumph Spitfire. I think it was $4,700. I blew my whole inheritance on this. I love that car, though, I tell you. That was... But, you know, the problem is today that car would cost $60,000 probably. So we don't want a kid like that coming into a lot of money and blowing it on stupid things like cars and trips and stuff like that. We want to make sure that our grandchildren get educated through college tuition, vocational programs and things like that. And so,
Harry, I have some bad news for you.
What?
Based on an 8% rate of return over 45 years, that $5,000 would be worth $160,000 right now.
Oh, my God. My bad.
Yeah, you're... Well, so, well, Harry, we...
Do as I say, not as I do, right?
So, we did have seminars this past week, and the topic was wills versus trusts. The next time we do seminars, it's going to be on at the tail end of the summer, believe it or not. In between, we do our client appreciation events.
Those are next month, the client events. And you'll all be getting, those of your clients, did the mailing go out yet?
No,
probably next week.
No.
You'll be getting a card inviting you to our 2 or 3 client appreciation seminars in June.
You're gonna get a piece of mail that's got our faces on it. Don't throw it out. Don't use it as a dartboard, please. Just open it up. And let us know if you'd like to attend our seminar. But the point is, wills versus trusts are our most popular seminars. We had over 100 people, I think, come between our seminars this past week. And if you missed it, or if you want more information, I mean, the seminars are great. I'm telling you, these free consults are the best, because why hear generic things that may not even apply to you?
It's one-on-one.
Get an hour one-on-one.
It's one-on-one. Yeah,
yeah.
That's it.
And it might be in Kingston. It could be in Albany. It could even be in your own home.
David did one this week in Glens Falls. Those of you up north, we have North Country radio listeners now. We do seminars up in Glens Falls.
Yeah, and I'll do home consults, particularly if you have a pool. I'd love to come. We'll do a consult. Not a problem. That's a joke.
You keep your suit and keep an extra bathing suit in the car and a towel.
No, I'm kidding.
But the
point is, we'll come to you if need be. In particular, if your family member can't get around too well.
We have. I went to Troy this week. I have a client who wanted to see me, and he has COPD, and so walking long distances, like from a parking lot to the elevator, he becomes quite winded. So I up there, it was fine. We've been making house calls for 30 years, definitely.
If I can real quick, just go back to that article that we started the hour on.
The Times article? The
Times article about how, it's pretty dreary, right? Everyone's going to get old and you can't afford it, right? Basically is what they're saying. What they weren't saying, just to remind everyone, is that there are attorneys out there who can educate you on different kinds of plans that can help fill in the gaps in what your income can cover or what Medicaid can cover. We can get you qualified faster. Or to heck with Medicaid, maybe assisted living is the way to go, but we can help plan so that you have more options. We don't want our clients to have no choice but to spend down X amount of dollars. We like when you have a choice. And so, you know, in general, people set up these Medicaid trusts of the world. If nothing else, to give themselves a choice. I tell people, Harry, that our trusts have to accomplish three things. And if it doesn't do those three things, run. Number one, it's got to help you avoid probate, which it does. Number two, it's got to help you start to qualify for Medicaid, get the clock ticking, or immediate help for care at home. Third thing, you got to still be able to control everything. Capital C, control. Our trusts do all three of those things.
Is your family owned and operated trusts? There's no banks involved. There's no institutions. There's nobody outside the family, generally, except people who don't have close family. You know, it's operated by people that you know, love, trust, and so yes.
And more importantly, that you control, that you can hire and fire.
Right. Exactly.
So you know, you create this thing just in case. We know that there's one part of life that isn't just in case. We all know we're all one day, it's not going to be Harry and Dave in the radio station. It's going to be other attorneys, right? We'll be long gone one day.
Nobody gets out of here alive, right?
Exactly. But, you know, let's make sure you avoid probate. Let's make sure.
Enjoy the ride.
Go buy a car for $5,000, right, Harry? Why not?
If you're good these days, but I got a riding lawnmower, costs more than that. I'm coming back a lot.
$160,000 you could have right now, but you had that hot rod.
Wow. I wish I...
You can listen to Dave in the next hour. He'll tell you what you could have done with that
money.
Yeah. He'll say 8% rate of return. Forget about that.
8%, that's a little, that's okay. I remember... Yeah. Back in the, back in the
80s? Well, on average, that's what 15, they say.
16% rates of return. I remember back in the days of Jimmy Carter when I had a client who had tax-exempt New York City MTA bonds. They were tax-exempt coupon, 15.5% tax-exempt bonds. That's between 76 and 80.
Jimmy Carter.
Take care.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.